Good afternoon. You are listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Krumrey. Thank you for tuning in. Elected Democrats across the country are lining up to support Kamala Harris after President Joe Biden ended his reelection campaign earlier this week. Democratic Alaska Congresswoman Mary Peltola is a notable exception. She explained her position in a news conference for Alaska reporters Tuesday morning. Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports.
Peltola opened by talking about how she's worked across party lines throughout her political career, and she said that no matter who won this November's election, she'd work with them.
Whether that president is Donald Trump, or if that president happens to be Kamala Harris, there will be a lot of common ground. There will be a lot of things that we collectively agree on.
And she commended Biden for his long career in public service, but not without taking a swipe at his record restricting resource development in Alaska.
President Biden made a lot of decisions that I don't think were in the best interest of Alaska, but I do really appreciate his lifetime commitment to public service.
So naturally, the first question of the news conference was essentially, who are you voting for this November? Donald Trump, Kamala Harris, or someone else?
While I really appreciate her stance on women's reproductive rights, Social Security, voting rights, and a host of other things, as the representative for Alaska, my number one job is looking at our economy and our energy situation and which of the two candidates will be better in terms of our energy portfolio.
Which of the two candidates? So another reporter asked again, you're open to supporting Donald Trump? Is energy more important to you personally than issues like democracy and reproductive freedom?
Unfortunately, for me personally, I am not able to look at things through that lens anymore. As the representative for all of Alaska, I have to put Alaska and Alaskan issues before my own personal preferences. And this is a very uncomfortable place to be.
And she repeated this from her first answer.
Having said all of that, you know, I am still keeping an open mind.
Which is a surprise. 86% of Democrats say they're supporting Harris in the latest NPR PBS NewsHour Marist poll. Just 4% say they're undecided. But at the same time, Peltola is facing a tough re-election battle against two Republican challengers, Alaska Lieutenant Governor Nancy Dahlstrom, she's a favorite of establishment Republicans at Donald Trump, and Nick Begich III, who's endorsed by the campaign arm of the conservative anti-establishment House Freedom Caucus. And the National Republican Congressional Committee, the House GOP's campaign group, launched its first television ad targeting Peltola on Tuesday. Republicans have decried actions by the Biden administration aimed at restricting oil and gas development across Alaska. In April, the administration said it would impose new restrictions on oil and gas leasing on 13 million acres of the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska. And Peltola is known for bucking her party. In fact, Peltola suggested Harris should cross party lines with her pick for VP.
I would love it if she chose a pro-choice Republican so we could get away from some of the inflammatory partisanship that we've seen.
But is she open to voting for Trump? The answer, she said, after Alaska Public Media reported on her comments, is no. Here's what she said on social media. Quote, I'm not voting for Trump and I'm not endorsing anyone else either. The media won't allow us to engage in nuanced conversation because it doesn't sell clicks. I won't vote for a candidate who's not pro-choice. I can't ask Alaskans to vote for a candidate who's not pro-energy. End quote. But in any case, in the news conference, Peltola downplayed the significance of any endorsement she might make. She said Alaska would not be competitive in the presidential election. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
And a recent Supreme Court decision could have important implications for fisheries in Alaska. Last month, the Supreme Court overturned a legal principle called Chevron deference. The decision came after a legal battle over who should pay for bycatch monitors on trawl boats. And KDLG's Meg Duff looks at the impact on Alaska fisheries.
Many trawl boats are required to have bycatch observers on board. And in Alaska, the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council can have trawl boats pay for those observers. That's the law. It's spelled out in the Magnuson-Stevens Act, which governs commercial fishing. But that act is not clear on who should pay for bycatch observers elsewhere. In the Atlantic, a federal agency created a similar funding program, and a trawling business sued. Anna Creary is an environmental lawyer in Anchorage. She's been watching that court case.
And so NIMS used its agency authority to interpret the statute and fill in the gap and say, we're going to do what we do in the North Pacific region here in the Atlantic region. And the court said, nope, you can't do that.
That Supreme Court decision in a case known as Loper-Bright was a reversal. 40 years ago, in an environmental lawsuit called Chevron versus Natural Resource Defense Council, the Supreme Court established a legal doctrine known as Chevron deference. That doctrine said that when federal laws are vague, federal agencies should fill in the gaps, and courts should defer to the expertise of those agencies. Curry says that understanding of agency power has become a baseline assumption.
The administrative law, you know, unbeknownst to many people, really forms the backbone of what we just perceive as, like, you know, our everyday life, like modern society, right? But the extent to which this decision destabilizes that, I think is quite profound.
Now, legal analysts say it will be easier to challenge federal agency decisions and to win. Creary says that challenges could play out in the agencies that set safety standards for everything from drugs to airplanes. It could also make regulations by the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council or the National Marine Fisheries Service easier to challenge. Creary is also watching for challenges to decisions by the Federal Subsistence Board, which carries out subsistence fishing rules under ANILCA. And she thinks the ruling could give a boost to lawsuits that challenge the very existence of that board, since it was created by agency regulation and not by law.
It's not just like the, you know, time, place, and manner regulations, but it's the actual regulations creating the Federal Subsistence Board itself. I think we will probably see a challenge to those regulations that follows the blueprint of what the Supreme Court laid out here in Loper-Bright.
Creary says the impact of the loss of Chevron deference will depend on the context.
Chevron was, you could use it as a sword, you could use it as a shield.
In Alaska, questions about how much power federal agencies have are important for all sorts of projects that could impact salmon habitat. Siobhan McIntyre is a lawyer at Trustees for Alaska, whose work includes lawsuits opposing Pebble Mine, which many Bristol Bay fishermen see as a threat to salmon.
If, for example, we're in a plaintiff's posture and holding agencies accountable, the overturning of deference to agencies could be positive for our clients. On the other hand, if we're in a defensive posture seeking to uphold an agency action, then the opposite could be true.
McIntyre says it's too soon to say what impact last month's Supreme Court rulings will have on Pebble Mine or on other lawsuits.
This decision really cuts both ways, and we can't project into the future as to what that will look like from here.
Under the Dunleavy administration, the state of Alaska has been fighting a number of federal agency decisions, including a decision by the Environmental Protection Agency to block Pebble Mine. Commissioner John Boyle, a Dunleavy appointee, leads Alaska's Department of Natural Resources. He says they are starting to look at what the ruling could mean for a variety of legal challenges.
And we can really look at that in the context of looking at environmental laws that have been passed, the Endangered Species Protection Act, the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, et cetera, et cetera. The onus is really now on Congress to be more specific in what they want the agencies to do.
Boyle says Loper-Bright might reinvigorate the state's effort to limit which streams and lakes are subject to federal wetland protection under the Clean Water Act. That's the law the EPA used to block Pebble Mine.
What may or may not constitute a water of the United States becomes a very big deal, again, because it can be the difference between being able to see a successful development project move forward or not. So the state has been very interested to better define and narrowly tailor what it constitutes a water of the United States to remove as much federal entanglement as we possibly can.
The Loper-Bright decision will also require judges to decide more highly specific and technical questions. Boyle says maybe that's a good thing.
So it will cause uncertainty. There's no question about it. And I'm sure there's going to be all kinds of new litigation and all kinds of new case law that's going to feed into to what extent does a court defer to a federal agency. But I don't think reining in the powers of federal agencies in particular is necessarily a bad thing at this juncture.
In Dillingham, I'm Meg Duff.
And you're listening to KTOO. For more stories, check out ktoo.org. Thank you for tuning in.